Hey everyone, this is Stelly FD.
And this is Heaton Shaw.
And in today's episode of The Startup Show, we're going to talk about how to make meetings meaningful.
I think we like talking about more than just sales and marketing.
We just want to bullshit and chat about business and life. And hopefully, while we're doing that, provide a lot of value to people.
The world's best business podcast.
Oh, shit. We got it.
For people trying to get shit done.
Yeah. We don't want to give you feedback that's bullshit.
We want you to do your best.
We're actually talking right now, not at the same place. Heaton is actually in his car. I'm at the office, but we're both, you know, loosely in the Bay Area. For people who don't know, Heaton loves to drive, loves to drive around. So I'm particularly excited when I get to talk to you, Heaton, when you're in your car. Like, I'm just like, this is going to be a good conversation because Heaton is happy right now.
That's funny.
So
I'm not going to be driving really soon. So hopefully it carries over. But we were chatting earlier about what we wanted to talk about. And I just mentioned that I had 15 meetings on, I believe it was Tuesday. It was Monday. It was Tuesday. Yeah, one of these days. And we just started talking about meetings. So we thought we'd do a whole episode on meetings and how to make any kind of meeting meaningful.
Yeah. So let's first, I'm very curious on how you kind of design and orchestrate your meetings. And we're going to first talk externally, meeting other people, but then we might want to go inwards in terms of how do you set meetings up for team situations, discussions, company meetings, and things like that. And then I'll chime in with the way I do it and how it's different and why. And we'll try to learn as much as possible about how we design the way we do try to make meetings meaningful. So you're meeting a ton of people on any given week. We talked earlier about this, probably around 25 or so a week, right? Which averages out to about 5 meetings a day. Now, that's a shit ton of meetings in my world, right? So, and I do know that you advise so many people, you're an investor in so many companies, you're involved in so many things, and you, whenever there's a crisis or something's going on, you give people as much time as needed, and you go really deep with people, and that's one of the most amazing things about you. But how do you, if you look at those 25 meetings a week, how do you decide who you're going to meet with and who you're not going to meet with, how long you meet with them, where, and what you're trying to do within or accomplish within that meeting? Let's talk about those kind of things.
Yeah, sounds good. And I know you have your fair share of meetings as well, and because you like to help people and stuff like that, and probably have a different system. For me, choosing the meetings are usually it's based on whether I can take care of it in an email, or it's something where I should, it's better to meet with the person in person. For example, I know a lot of entrepreneurs and founders and people even in some of these companies, like in larger companies, like executives and stuff, that are often not located in San Francisco or the Bay Area, and they go come visit. And so, there's probably a good 30-40% of those meetings that are people that are visiting the Bay Area. And those are very hard to put to email, because I might have already put them to email. What I mean by that is I gave them feedback via email or a quick phone call or a long phone call. And, then they're in town. So people want to meet up, when they're in town, which makes a lot of sense. So I try to make time for that. I think it's respectful if I already know somebody to meet them in person. And if I don't know somebody, but, usually it's is it interesting to me? Is it interesting to them? Do I think I can add value? So there's a whole bunch of those things I just think about, and then I figure out what to do. Oftentimes I'm just impacted and have a lot of meetings of my own or a lot of things to do, and so I can't meet with these people, but I do my best to meet people who come visit here, especially if I already have a relationship or it's just a meaningful, naturally it'll be a meaningful conversation because they have some scale. I can learn something. It's complementary to something I'm thinking about, or in general, it's somebody that I want to get to know better. So those are my general guidelines, but I'm just generally super helpful. Being helpful is mostly my goal, and then learning is another goal of mine. And so in most of these meetings, I'm able to do that based on the questions I ask and also the kind of things we're discussing, which are usually in a business context. And I would say 20-30% of my meetings lately are pulling out metric data, Excel sheets, product flow, stuff like that. And we're really kind of oftentimes digging into some deeper stuff right away.
So that's also where that's the things that I've noticed with you where you get most excited about is when it's going really deep, right? Because once you've given enough people help or advice, or you've had conversations with them on a fairly superficial level, like just, hey, what's your problem? We need more of this or that. Well, try this or that. You know, once you have like enough of these kind of fairly superficial, even if they're helpful conversations that still don't go that deep, once you had like a thousand, 5,000, 10,000 of those meetings, eventually it becomes very repetitive, right? Hence why I would assume you're trying to see, can I give help without having to allocate 60 minutes of my time? Can I answer this question in email? Have I written about this? Has somebody else written about this? Which is something you really like to do, is like pointing people to the right resources. And then if we meet, let's meet to really get to know each other, and let's meet to, if possible, dig really deeper than maybe an email exchange can do or a blog post can do, right?
Yeah, you explain it really well, better than I can, because I just try to do me, so
yeah,
to speak.
Yeah.
But like that's pretty spot on like what's going on in my head when I try to figure this out. Because yeah, I don't want to go meet with somebody and have to give superficial advice. And it's not even superficial, it's just generic. And it's oftentimes it's superficial. But that's like the worst thing for me. It's almost like that's how I die slowly, because what happens is I'm repeating myself. But if I don't repeat myself, I should just talk to myself. That's how I feel about it. So I really like the way you describe that. I do definitely like to go way deeper. Yep.
So when it comes to meeting with people, for me, the system that I have applied, I've definitely learned from you and have adopted in some ways. I used to be very heavy on offering people like 10-minute calls, 5-minute calls. I always was fairly short on my calls. But if people ask me for time, I would allocate like an hour or two on Fridays, and I would have these like 10-minute calls one after the other, and we just book them out as kind of office minutes or hours or whatever, and be super tense, but just go through all these conversations. And today I've applied much more of a system, just because also of scale, like the amount of advice emails I get or people emailing me asking me for things has just gone up a lot. So now in order to manage that, I always will first stick an email a little longer than I used to and go, can you ask the question email first, and I'll see if I can answer them. And 9 out of 10 times I just have written about this before, I've given a talk about it before. I start sharing a lot more the Startup Chat podcast episodes with people. Listen to this episode, right? Just like the other day we released the Coming to Silicon Valley, you know, and how you did it, how I did it, and things to keep in mind if you're like new to the valley. And I sent this episode to like 4 different people that were asking me about this. That's kind of a way to scale. And then I still always make sure to say, hey, watch this episode or listen to this episode. And then if you have follow-up questions, shoot them. And if they're really like ones that I haven't answered before that are difficult to answer, let's jump on a call. Like then I'm excited because we're talking about something I haven't talked about before in depth. But if I've written about it in detail, in depth, if I've talked about it in length, I can just share those resources with you and just be as helpful as I would be on a phone call, but I spend a lot less time on it. So definitely adopt that system. Now, what I do is very polar opposite, although we're very similar in many ways, in the sense that when I'm in the Bay Area, when I'm at home and at the office, I try to meet almost nobody unless... And when I do, I always try to do it very leveraged. So I'll do an event or a meetup. So if lots of people from Europe are currently in the Bay Area and want to meet with me, I'll try to set up a time where I invite everybody to a bar. So I'm going to meet with 5 or 6 people at once versus meeting every day somebody for coffee. Or we do these, you know, I'll go to, like yesterday we did a sales workshop for YC founders of the most recent batch. So we had like 40 people and we hang out, talking to them, coaching them, talking to their problems. And then I have a bunch of emails from them in my inbox and now I'm starting my relationship with them. But it's very leveraged, very one-to-many if I can. I don't like to do a lot of one-on-one meetings other than if it's somebody I know, if it's somebody that comes through a source that's really, really that I respect, if you tell me, please take, you know, some time and meet this person in person, I'll do that. I won't ask any question. I'll go, if he didn't ask me to do this, it's going to be valuable and useful, so I'll do it. Or if I have a prior relationship. But most of the time when people, and lots of people want to meet for coffee or lunch, and I do get it, and I'd love to have lunch with more people. But when I'm in the Bay Area, I just say categorically no to most of these. But then I do travel a lot. And when I travel, I do a lot of public speaking. And when I do that, I'm super social. And I meet with, again, I do meetups, I go to bars, I visit customers at their offices. I'll meet anybody and everybody, as many humans as I can. And I'll make myself as available as I can because I don't have my family around. I don't have to go to the office. I'm at this new city, a new place. So I'm much more like open-minded and like much more in a social mindset. Like, let's meet people here. Let's be useful to the ecosystem here. Let's go to incubators, VCs, investors, whatever. And then when I'm in the Bay Area, I'm like, I don't want to meet anybody. I just want to be with my kids. And then I want to be at the office working. So I don't want to do lunch meetings or coffee meetings if I can avoid it. That's kind of my system. It's very all or nothing, but still fairly similar in the sense of we're trying to accomplish the same thing, which is being helpful in the best way possible.
Yeah. And at scale, right? You know, it's not like you're trying to help two people a week. It's more like you're trying to give advice, help, and learn and all that from, you know, up to a dozen or more people.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like it. It's kind of the same ethos, just different tactics. And like, I think we should definitely give some tips for this before we even, or at least a couple before we go on to like meetings inside of a company. Cause like, you know, there's not much more to say, right? Like we both like helping people and meeting people. And I think there's two vastly different ways to do it. But, you know, many would probably say we're both equally as effective.
Do we want to look at the other side of the table, which is, you know, most people, I would assume, don't have some of the challenges that we have, which is too many people want to meet with me. How do I organize and coordinate this? But most people will want to meet specific people. And then when they get the chance to sit down with Heaton Shah, it's like, how do I make this meeting really valuable for Heaton? How do I make sure I don't waste any time? How do I make sure I get even the meeting
we
in
can,
the first place?
Yeah, I don't think we've talked about that at all. No. So yeah, we should definitely, if you feel like that's something you want to discuss. Yeah, I mean, I'll just go and jump right into it. Yeah. But for me, it's like all very context specific, where it's like, I try to always make sure I have context or the person has given me enough context. So if they've got material like a deck or executive summary or even like some, you know, stuff that's unreleased on their website, I'll encourage them to give it to me earlier. And that way, what I've noticed is for myself, I'm not wasting 10, 15 minutes with the person just getting ramped up on what they're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. So making sure the meeting is somewhat prepared, they've given you context in an email, making sure they've, how do you feel about people asking you questions that point to the fact that they're not on your newsletter, they're not reading your Twitter feed, they didn't see your last talk, like they're asking you questions that you've answered many, many times before. So if they've done a bit of homework, they probably would have known. Is that something that is annoying? Do you care? I would assume you appreciate when you feel like this person knows these things and now they're asking me deeper questions about them.
Yeah, I definitely appreciate it. I guess for my attitude about it is I like to walk into a meeting not having that expectation that they know anything.
Yeah.
And that's been more helpful than thinking, you know, than expecting them to know anything, just because like there's just so many people out there. And I'm surprised on both ends of how many people have read some of my stuff. And I'm also equally surprised at how many people haven't.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right. So any other tips that we want to give, or any tips that we want to give about like how to make meetings meaningful when you meet other people?
I think it's just being mindful of people's time. If you're actually meeting with someone, you should think about how they're taking the time for you and vice versa. Oftentimes, I even think of it like make sure that they get value from it. But at the same time, you know, if you're meeting with someone and somebody like me, generally, you know, if you're already in the meeting or whatever, there's either for many people, there's something they want, you know, like they might be looking for something from you, even though you might be asking them for advice. So you should try to identify what that is. I think for Steli and I, it's mostly just if we think we're being helpful to you and we're learning, we're generally pretty happy with the meeting. But a lot of other folks that you might be meeting, they might have a very specific thing they're doing right now. And if there's any way you can offer anything, that might be smart, you know?
Yeah, I love it. It makes a lot of sense. All right, let's look inwardly. Running team meetings and company meetings. So how many meetings would you say a week out of the 25 are internal meetings with people that work with you on your companies?
Yeah, probably 10 to 20%. So if there's 25, I have not more than one or two even. So let's say like one every day around that, that's like scheduled or like a meeting that's like a decision-making meeting. Usually my meetings are, again, I know we're talking about meetings inside of a company. So for me, it's like if there's different types of meetings and I try to really identify with our team what type of meeting this is and what the outcome of the meeting should be.
Hmm. So what are the types of meetings?
Yeah, I'll just spitball because there's many types of meetings. But
some of them are like most common ones.
Yeah, absolutely. And like for me, it just came out of the fact that we don't want a lot of meetings. By default, we don't want a lot of meetings. So how do you make meetings effective if you need to have them? And how do you determine whether you should have them? So it started for us with the type of meeting. So, and I'll give a bunch of examples, and I'm sure you have a bunch. But like one type of meeting I think that's a pretty common meeting is what I would call getting on the same page meeting. It's not an alignment meeting where you know things are off, but it's more like an update meeting. Those kind of meetings I try to make either really, really quick. Though think of that as like a weekly stand-up type of meeting, right? What'd you do last week? What's going to happen this week? All right, everybody get to work kind of thing. Or a meeting where it's like, you know, like for those kind of update meetings, I actually tend to say, hey, can we just do an email? And then if there is something to discuss, let's get in the meeting. Right. And it's like everyone just say what the hell's going on. Right. And then I might even call out people and say, hey, give us an update on this, this and this. But I'll do it all in an email or even a Slack message and instead of having the meeting. So I've been known in the past to definitely make people skip meetings and just crush them by like just saying, hey, let's just get an update in text or voice or something, you know, whatever it takes. And then the other type of meeting is what I call a brainstorming meeting. And that's a common meeting too, where you might think it's an update meeting or something like that, but then all of a sudden people go into ideation mode. Mm-hmm. And if people start going into ideation mode, that's when you hear people throw out what I would call random fucking ideas, right? And if I see a lot of randomness, I'll be like, all right, let's get back to basics. Let's get back to what our goal is in this meeting. And I try to make sure I'm bringing it home. Someone has to be like the monitor of some of these meetings, especially if you're a meeting heavy culture, to be able to sit there and be like, well, what are we trying to get out of it? And how do we bring everybody back to a place where like we can make this a productive, actionable meeting where when we're out of it, we've either made decisions and or we also know next steps.
Yeah, I love that. So there's update meetings and then there's brainstorming meetings, right?
Yeah.
So when you meet, is it, I would assume most of them are either a phone call or there's some type of a virtual setting. There's usually not physical meetings that you guys have, right? Because you're a remote team.
Yeah, for the teams that I have, it's all remote. I would say 99% is remote.
Okay. And then would you say is mostly one-on-one or is it mostly always like three or four multiple people in those?
That's a good question. I'd say my one-on-ones are done differently. Huh. If it's just me and somebody else on one of my teams, one of our teams, but like if it's a multiple person meeting, it's definitely more structured like this where it's a brainstorming, an update or something like that. So if it's a one-on-one, I generally make those pretty fast with people on our teams, unless we're really just trying to figure something out or it's a harder problem.
Cool. All right. So let me ask you this. So for us internally, maybe to share some of this, and I'm curious about some of your thoughts on this. We used to be just a super tiny team of just like six people for most of the life cycle of the company. And there we had just no meetings or we had like a Monday and a Friday, like 15 minute. This is what we did this week and this is what we want to do next week kind of a deal. Just an update meeting. And then all real like brainstorming discussions happened usually during company retreats. So we did a quarterly retreat where we just traveled with the six people to some cool city, worked out of like one house or apartment. And during that time, we'd have like roadmap type of stuff and really brainstorm discussions, really in-depth stuff. But when we were back at the office, it was like heads down, everybody executed, knew what they needed to do. And we just had quick like update, getting on the same page type of a deal, meetings. Now the team has grown, especially so this year. So now we're like 16 people or so, and we have most of them are remote. We used to be mostly kind of in the office, although lots of people were traveling, but now most people are remote. So we still kind of have the Monday, Friday meeting. That's the Monday meeting is a update meeting, which is like, this is what happened last week. This is what's happening this week. And the Friday meeting used to be more of a brainstorm meeting. But depending on the priority, it turns into whatever the highest priority item is of the company. It's like that is the thing we talk about. So when it was recruiting, it was like the de facto, let's talk about recruiting versus now that's more like onboarding and like, how do we reorganize the way we work all together? It's more of kind of an operations meeting. But I think that our meetings right now stink, right? They suck, especially the update meeting. It's useless to have, like, it's kind of a cool to have a Skype call where you see like 16 people and you have audio video. So everybody gets a sense for the size of the business. And oh yeah, I do work with other humans. So it has some social value, but it also feels like all this could be done in chat or in an email. right? This is mostly just different teams running through updates, but it doesn't feel that productive. But at the same time, I'm very sensitive to the fact that I'm not sure how productive a 16-person brainstorm can be. I don't think that that's a smart idea. And like, if you want to keep it at a tight deadline of like just 30 or 40 minutes, have like 16 people in a virtual Skype call brainstorm about some generic thing seems like a waste of time.
Can I talk about something I did yesterday, which I do commonly, but it was just a little aggressive yesterday. So I had a very little time. And it was a good friend of mine that like I'm helping quite a bit. And so he understands the style. And so literally we had a call at 5. I got there at 4:50 and I knew the call was going to be like 10 to 15 minutes. So we literally at 4:50, we had 5 minutes on one thing, just him and I. Then we had another 5 minutes on another thing. We wrote all that down while we were doing it. There was probably a good 1,000 words all bulleted. And then we got on the call, sent the person the link to that doc that we just made in the last 10 minutes. And then we went through it and we were done in 15. So in a total of 25 minutes, where we only wasted another person's time for 15 minutes, we were able to make, I would say, probably a week's worth of decisions in that meeting. And so for what I would do if it's like a 16-person meeting and let's say it is a brainstorm, is I would just add the structure. And if I have to, if there is no structure in the beginning of a meeting and I happen to be in it, I will create the structure in the first 5 minutes, 10 minutes of the meeting, if not quicker.
Love it. It makes a ton of sense. The other thing, just as a funny imagery to throw out there, but in general, I think, as you said, it's important whenever you do meetings. I think one rule that's really important is you want to have somebody that's emceeing the whole thing, right? Somebody that makes sure that we are on track, we're all on the agenda, and the timeline is realistic, because it just needs one person to bring up some big critical point and derail the conversation, and then other people jumping in and different opinions. And all of a sudden, this 15-minute update meeting turned into like a 45 brainstorming meeting that ended with no decisions. And then you know you have that unsatisfied feeling of we all just wasted a shit ton of time. So the best way to combat that is obviously to have good discipline, but also to just have somebody that's really responsible for being the CEO of that meeting, right? If it's not the CEO itself. So the other thing, I saw a picture the other day on Facebook, which was funny, which is, you know, you have those stand-up meetings that supposedly should help to keep meetings brief because people are not sitting down. They're not comfortable. They're standing. So they'll get tired after like a certain amount of minutes. And then there was an image of a huge group of people like planking on the floor. And it's like, you know, the stand-up meeting 2.0. It's like you can only have a meeting for like 2 minutes or
That's
3 minutes.
Hilarious.
Since everybody's planking while we're giving each other updates about something. I had to laugh out loud when I saw that. But keeping things brief and tight and making sure that it's very disciplined is super important, I think, in general, especially with internal meetings that can just run out of control.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, if you're in a stage where like you've got some meetings and you're probably going to need more and all that because there's just more people, I just highly recommend that you just think about this stuff and think about how to structure your meetings with some kind of framework, formula, schedule. And so, you know, stand-ups are pretty easy because stand-ups are meant to be pretty quick. Even if there's a lot of people, you can usually get through it within 15 to 30 minutes, even with 16 people, which is not a bad thing if that's the fastest way to get everyone on the same page. What I found is that you can convert that in a remote team to like Slack and just make sure everyone updates on Slack. There's also some tools you could use. I don't know which ones are the best or anything, but I know that there are. They exist now. And so I would just recommend that, like, as companies are scaling and as you're thinking about that, someone's just conscious. Just like you said, there's like a meeting monitor, leader, whatever. I think someone should be conscious of the meetings and whether they're a waste of time or not, and start designing the meetings in different ways if necessary. And I found that to be the number one most valuable thing as a company scales around meetings. Otherwise, what happens is in 3 to 6 months, you look back and you're like, oh no, we now have 15 meetings a week.
Yeah.
You know?
Meeting creep, right? I mean, that's
exactly.
That is actually my last question for you to wrap up this episode, which is, you know, you can set company meetings as the team grows. And maybe you just have one meeting a week or two that are really brief and you're doing a great job. But now there's these teams and the teams are creating their own meetings. And maybe there's even some more, like there's the team leads or the managers that should all have one meeting. And all of a sudden there's like this massive, you think we only have two meetings a week, but you know, you blinked once and now there's like everybody has about 7 meetings every week. And how do you combat that? How do you make sure that this doesn't kind of run out of control? Do you restrain teams on how many meetings they can have? How do you make sure that there's no meeting creep happening? Because even if as an overall business, you as the founder says, we only meet once as an entire company, maybe different teams schedule lots of meetings and counter room and all that.
The brute force approach is audit the calendars and start calculating how many dollars a meeting costs based on people's hourly rates. And that is the one thing that adds up. Let's just do some quick math. $30 an hour, 10 people, 1 hour, $300. And then you just start showing these managers, these team leaders, whoever's setting up these meetings, hey, this meeting's going to cost this much money. I just want to make sure you know that and that this meeting is worth that. Because if this meeting is not worth that $300, then we should not be doing.
Yeah, I love that. You know, I do love that. And then also, it's much easier when you talk in dollar and cents to say, hey, after this 30-minute conversation, this cost the business $500. Did we get more than $500 worth out of this, right? Did we really get a huge ROI out of sitting down with like five people discussing things for an hour?
The beauty is this, Steli, like, if it's a weekly meeting and it costs $500 each time, that's $2,000 a month.
Yeah.
It adds up. It doesn't matter what size company you are. That stuff adds up. And that's like a hidden cost, you know? Like most people don't think about it.
All right. So, and that's the final tip of the episode. Like convert the meetings that you have in dollars and cents and track them and communicate that so you make sure that you're generating more values out of your meetings and make them more meaningful that way than they cost you, because there is a cost associated with meeting. Yesterday was funny. We did this workshop for YC. There's 40, 45 founders showing up. It's a 3-hour thing, pretty intense. And at the end, you know, we get lots of praise, this and that. And somebody is like, well, you could have charged a ton of money for this, but doing this free is really awesome and blah, blah, blah. And then somebody else said, well, it's free, but at the same time, it's not free at all, because we all could have invested 3 hours in something different. So this was a really expensive thing for all of us to do. So it was important that it was really valuable. And this kind of shows that attitude of like, just because I didn't pay money, I still paid in time, and my time is worth money.
Right? Invest in that founder.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. I'll give you his number later. All right, people, this is it from us for this episode. We will hear you very soon.
Bye.
All right, bye.